What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Central Virginia Sport Performance Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jay DeMayo. Guys, we've got an awesome discussion today. I get to sit down with H2F Program Director Carson Randall, and we're going to talk really about training tactical athletes, working with soldiers, the pros and cons of today's kind of American society when it comes to how they're building out this program, and really, you know, the connections it has when it comes to what a lot of us do in the team sports side, the amount of hats he has to wear and the different groups he needs to bring together to make sure that, you know, the operators are working at their highest level, staying as healthy as possible and ready to go as often as humanly possible. Carson, thank you so much, man, for joining us today.
Good morning, Jay. My pleasure. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, man. So listen, before we dive too far into this, you know, who is Carson and how did you get into this tactical side of developing people?
Sure. So like most of us, you know, tactical strength and conditioning really wasn't a thing in the early 2000s. So I started out in collegiate strength and conditioning at Florida Atlantic University. I worked there for about 5 years and then moved over to the tactical side within the POTF, Preservation of the Force and Family, within Special Operations. They were the ones within the tactical realm that were kind of out in front with hiring strength coaches, athletic trainers, things like that. And then with 2019, I moved over to, which is now Fort Moore, formerly Fort Benning, there in Georgia, working for the Tactical Athlete Performance Center, known as the TAPC. And then last year, I took my current position with the holistic health and fitness program with the Army. So that's how I got to where I am now.
That's pretty awesome, man. And, you know, stops along the way, learning from some great people, and having a military background gives you a pretty unique perspective for this really unique professional position that you're in now.
Yeah, you know, having a military background helps, but I get asked all the time if that's a requirement, and it's absolutely not. It does kind of help familiarize you with some of the lingo, some of the way things operate, you know, rank structure, stuff like that. But you definitely do not have to have served to be working for the military now. In some ways, I actually think it's beneficial not to. But anyway.
Yeah, but I would assume that understanding the levels and who's above who and where these rankings help drive discussions to help impact better decisions can be very, it's probably not as important for the smaller level people, but people in your situation where you're overseeing the entire program, I could see that being almost vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Knowing who to talk to about what, knowing who to talk to in regards to equipment, you know, personnel, just because if you go to the wrong person or the wrong avenue, it you're just not going to get traction. And if you go to the right person, what would take potentially months can take weeks. So a lot of that's knowing where to go, but at the end of the day, it's also relationships. It's taking care of people, because if they know who you are and you're, you know, nice to work with, then they'll kind of go above and beyond to help you with what you need. Otherwise, you're just another civilian who needs to get in line. So knowing how to treat people and knowing who to talk to is very, very helpful.
Another civilian that just needs to get in line. I'm sure that there's a lot of instances where people, when they start in these positions, can find places to be intimidated because of that.
Yeah, I think one of the things people need to understand moving to tactical, specifically from, you know, the private sector, whether it be personal training, collegiate strength and conditioning, is within those realms, you know, typically it's your facility, your program, you know, you have complete control. But when you work for the federal government and uniformed personnel, you're an advisor. You make recommendations. So you don't control anything. And if you try to come at it that way, it's not going to work. So learning how to talk to people, learning how to phrase things a little differently. You know, you're not here to fix anything. Nothing's broken. You're here to optimize. You're here to assist, to help. You then become way better received when you address it that way, and not just saying that, but truly believing that. That's what's going to get people to actually want to have conversations and talk to you, because now you're viewed as an asset, not as this weight room bully or whatever. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
no, it totally does. And I think that's not very much different than handling a difficult coach, right? Like, now, yeah, sure. You know, a 2-star general versus a basketball coach, in the grand scheme of life, there is a astronomical difference when it comes to, no pun intended, ranking. But at the end of the day, ensuring that the individuals that you're there to assist and that you're there to help, as you just said, you know, you are here to optimize. I think that is a great term. Like if you can't communicate to them, A, what you're trying to get done for them, and B, how it can be beneficial, and C, and this is where I think a lot of us miss the boat, and probably where I screwed up a lot early on in my career. And looking back, I think I had no idea that this could be a thought process, but like, how what you're trying to do is assisting with what they want. I think all too often we look at things and we're like, you know, like what we were talking about earlier before we started talking, like a lot of strength coaches is like, oh, but we got to put another 10 pounds on their bench. We got to put another 15 pounds on their squat, but they might not care about that. It may just be more about why getting stronger can help them health-wise, and why, instead of doing something the old way and changing it just a little bit, can be a little bit more beneficial to helping these men and women in the long run.
Yeah, Jay, you hit the nail on the head, right? What does the coach want? What does the commander want? And within our world, it's commander's intent. So you would sit down with that individual and their staff, and you really need to understand and at times help them clarify their intent, because this is not their wheelhouse. So they may say some things that need to be refined and translated a little bit within the physical domain or the nutritional domain. But once you have a really good idea of their intent, then you can really start making decisions in regards to the program to get after some of those things. For like a real world example, where I'm at Fort Moore, basic training within the Army, it's known as OSIT, one station unit training. One of the things my commander is really looking at is foot march speed. So ruck marching, movement under load. And one of his things that he's asked us to look at is, can we be a little bit more aggressive with the speed in which these trainees and soldiers move? So that's one thing our staff is doing a pretty big deep dive on. You know, we're getting into the literature, we're looking at associated injuries and all these different things to provide recommendations or different courses of action so that he can make a decision. And ultimately, again, it's his decision to make. It's our job to provide him the pros and cons of different courses of action that he ultimately will decide upon.
Yeah, and I think that starts with something that took me a long time in my career to actually understand, and that is the value of defining terms, or at least coming together like with the higher ups to establish like what their goals actually are and what the words are that they're using to define them actually mean. I've talked about, I haven't talked about this in a while, but like there was a something I wrote an article about. Actually, I think I contributed a chapter with it to one of, I think it was McKeefrey's books, but it's a, our field hockey coach used to talk about fitness, 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 fitness. And finally, one day I was just like, what does that mean? And like, what do you want that to mean? Like, what is, why is that important to you? And it flipped everything we did on our head. And that's not easy, right? To sit there and take a step back and be like, I mean, nicely, like you couldn't say this to a general and I probably couldn't say this to a coach, but it's like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, like, tell me what you need. Like, what does this mean? What does fitness mean? Because like when you say foot speed, right, on until you say on the rucks, that could be interpreted into a trillion different things, right? That could be, are we doing like tippy-tappy ladder drills? Are we looking at like ground contacts being lower on their, you know, on their sprints, on their running, things like that? So identifying not just what they say, but why and how to make it happen is something, I think that gets a lot of us in trouble. Because we just sit there and go, oh, no, well, that's what this means. That's what the term means. And it's like, well, unfortunately, whether we want it to mean that or not, or whether we in our vocation, in our domain, think that's what it means or not, they couldn't care less what we think it means because it means something different to them.
Right. Asking questions. And like I mentioned earlier, that sometimes it's a strength or sometimes it's a benefit to not have a military background. You're not expected to know anything. You know, they know you're an outsider. They know you're new to this environment. So when you ask questions, it's not, no one looks at you like, well, you should know this. So it's great to really drill down, to really make sure you understand exactly what that commander or that master fitness trainer wants. And a lot of times, to your point, they say things that in other sectors or other populations mean different things. So for example, I get a lot of people that come to me and say, hey, I need to get faster. I need to work on my speed. Well, for a collegiate strength coach, that typically that's going to be sprint speed, 40-yard dash, 60-yard, whatever. But in the tactical environment, that's typically their 2 mile time, because that's the distance they're required to run as part of their combat fitness test. So they'll say, okay, can you help me get faster? Can you help me increase my speed? And then the first question is, okay, in what context? Oh, my 2 mile time. Okay. So yes, we can help you get you faster, but that's not necessarily the same as sprint speed. And it's just getting right back to the root of what they're asking.
Yeah, man, I love that. And, you know, getting back to the root of what they're asking is coming full circle to your position and what they're asking of you. And it's unique now kind of because of, I mean, really, there's not a nice way to sugarcoat this. Like, Americans are fat and happy.
They've been spoiled with convenience. There's really no reason to get off your couch. I mean, you can have all your groceries delivered to you. You can watch endless shows on TV, you know, your cell phone, you have infinite access to information. There's absolutely no reason to get off your couch other than going to school which, you know, the early, like what, 2001, 2000, 2001, a lot of kids weren't even going to school because of all the lockdown stuff. And we're seeing that now with the kids that are coming to basic training, you know, because they are old enough now where they're joining the army. So they're even more deconditioned than kids were 3-4 years ago. And that's a day in my life, is trying to get the people that are on the ground conducting the physical training to truly get them to understand the population they're working with. An average company of trainees is about 200. So within that 200 person formation, yeah, you may have 10, 15, 20% of individuals that come from an athletic background, that are high level performers. But you also have 15, 20, 25% of individuals that did very, very little to prepare for basic training. And you have to understand that if you're going to train at a high level, you're going to break a lot of people. And that's not good. So it's getting them to understand that early on, the volume and intensity of training that you want to do, probably not appropriate, nowhere near optimal for the vast majority of the people in your formation. So then how can we come up with a structure that allows people of very different ability groups all to train the same thing? Because at the end of the day, it's a military, and the military does group training, but do things a little bit different, where the high level performers can do high level things and the low level performers can adjust to make sure that they're not overtraining or breaking. And it's not easy, but that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, so I guess that would just lead me to my next question, is how do you how do you make it scalable? You know, like, that's kind of one of the pros of CrossFit, right? Is that they talk about how it's scalable and how, you know, if you can't do X, you can do Y. I guess it's a two-part question. How are you determining levels? Because I think that could be important for anybody in any position. And then how does that impact progression through basic training or on the next steps, right? Because one would assume that fitness level plays a pretty significant role in where these men and women end out moving up, down, sideways, laterally, whatever, through the ranks.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. So any strength coach knows that your program needs to meet people where they're at. And to know where they're at, there needs to be some sort of assessment. So one of the things we do is we make sure that there's a very basic assessment on the front end, so we can properly identify where these individuals are at. Then we have to make sure that the training is appropriate for the different ability groups, but is also the ability to auto-regulate. So we really rely on educating the trainees on RPE, rating of perceived exertion. And anybody that's used RPE knows that it's a skill. It has to be learned. And they're going to mess it up in the beginning. But over time, after a few weeks, they start to understand RPE. And then they're able to make better decisions on how fast to run or how heavy to lift, based off their ability, but also how they're feeling that day. And the analogy I use, 22-week OSIT, that is in season. I mean, their days are long. The training is dense. So there's going to be days that they wake up and they have to do an ability group run or a strength training circuit, and they're just not feeling great. Well, you still have to train, but maybe today's not the day to push it. Maybe the day's the day you stimulate, don't annihilate, so to speak, grease the groove, you know, still get after it, still fill the buckets, if you will, but you still have a 12-hour training day in front of you. So it's getting them to understand that thought process is what's going to be more sustainable over the course of their career. And that's, I think, a big disconnect between what you see on Instagram and what you see in high level sport, because their training in the off season is very polarized, but they don't have that luxury within 22 week OSIS. So I hope that kind of gets after some of what you were asking.
No, 1,000,000,000%. And it runs right into this next question, right? Because here's the difference. Here's the big difference, in my opinion, and one of, right? We're preparing, it's what we're preparing for. Like what you guys are preparing for versus what we're preparing for. We're preparing to play in front of 20,000 people when we play Florida, or in a raucous crowd at UD Arena. And we can sit here and make substitutions and do whatever if people don't have it that day. You just got to figure it out. Your people don't have that option. When the general says go, it doesn't matter if they don't have it that day. You better find it. So when we're looking at it with that thought process, there's part of me that sits here and goes, that's cool that they've got an APRE set up and they've got the ability to make changes to X, Y, and Z because of whatever these factors may be. But then there's also part of me that says, but there's times where you're going to have to, like we talk about this, you're going to have to perform on bad days. Well, these people really have to perform on bad days. So are there times where you, once they've gotten, okay, I don't know how to ask this. Is there a level where you would then take them and say, we need to be able to go today because you would need to be able to go today? Like, is there like a part of the tiering process with this? Like, they need to get to some general specific health positions. Then it's, you got to be able to train under fatigue as well. Or does basically like their job take care of that for you?
So my personal opinion, within basic training, my belief is that we should utilize PT, physical training, to develop qualities and teach movement and teach a lot of things that they're going to hopefully utilize the rest of their lives. The role of the actual job training, the period of instruction, that is where they get after some of those things. And the training is designed very well for that. So for example, they may end a week-long training event with a long, substantial foot march. So you're tired, you're sleep deprived, you might be a little bit low on fuel because you've been eating limited calories. But guess what? You still gotta complete this foot march. So I think the job-specific training should do that, and the physical training, the PT piece, should build qualities. Now, within their first unit of assignment, you know, where they're actually working with the men and women that they will deploy with, maybe physical training looks a little bit different. But where I'm at in basic training, I don't think we should murky the water of PT needs to be hard and it needs to, you know, hard for the sake of being hard. We want them to understand we're doing this to develop you, that you can then use that increased capacity to train at a higher level.
Build the general to increase the ability to have outputs in the specific. Sounds familiar.
I would hope, right?
Yeah, it sounds like what we're supposed to do. So now
and
that we're
coming,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. One analogy I use all the time, and I didn't invent this, I stole this from somebody, is we are not trying to raise people's ceilings. that is a more of a sports model, right? Increase performance, keep the highs very high. We're trying to raise the floor. So it's not so much who are you on your best day, it's who are you on your worst day. Because in the real world, you're still going to have to be able to do the job. Nobody cares how much sleep you've had, how many calories you've had. Like, there's a job to do, you have to get it done. So what is your bottom of the barrel performance level on your worst day? And the way we do that is we really make sure that we are training, identifying, and then training your weaknesses. You don't need to be the best at anything, but you cannot be bad at anything. And that's where the hybrid model kind of comes into play.
Yeah, I think that too, you know, when we look at it on the performance side in athletics, we often talk about building that base, or as you said, you know, raising the floor in the weight room, right? You've got to do your general strength stuff and it's building that way, but we don't look at it in a fitness realm. And I think that probably does more damage than it does good.
I completely agree. And there's so many different analogies you could give to hammer that point home. But the more robust you are, you know, whether it be aerobically, your relative strength, your mobility, that is just more options your body has when shit hits the fan and now you're fatigued. You have more options to compensate as opposed to being highly specialized or very limited based off your training. And that, unfortunately, I think that goes against how people are taught to train. You know, that, you know, what's an 8-week program to build my bench? You know, okay, yeah, I can give you that. And maybe we build your bench by 30 pounds, but that's a hyper specialized movement. And by being hyper specialized for 8 weeks on the bench, that's 8 weeks now you've been neglecting maybe other things. So in the grand scheme of things, is that a win or is that a loss? And that's not up to me to decide. That's up to the individual. It's my job and the people on the HF staff to help inform individuals the overall cost of what they're trying to get after. If an individual is like, hey, I want to be single digit body fat. Okay, great. But that may come at a cost of other things. Are you willing to pay that? And maybe they are. But again, we have to inform them that leaner isn't better. Higher bench press necessarily isn't better. Faster 2 mile time may not be better because you're going to pay the price somewhere else. So we want to educate these trainees that are new to the military, all of those concepts, so that they then go to their first unit of assignment with a little bit of a better understanding of what training for a tactile athlete looks like compared to that of an athlete or what they see on Instagram.
Yeah, and I think that, again, coming back to the education and building things out and sort of picking the battles that you need to fight, a terrible term to use there with the group of people we're talking about, but I hope that everyone understands what I'm saying. So I guess just leads to this question for me, isn't it? And that is, where do you see this going? Like, what's the future of H2F?
That's a great question. The reality of any program in the military, at the end of the day, it all comes back to money. What is the return on investment? H2F is an expensive program. So will the Army look at the price of this program and say, this is a price worth paying because we are saving money elsewhere. We are hurting people less. We are graduating more people. We are retaining more people. Luckily, those decisions are made way above me. I just know that within basic training, we want to make sure that we are hurting less people, graduating more people, and ultimately getting people to understand that the Army is investing in you. If you go to an H2F resourced organization, brigade, you have dietitians, strength coaches, physical therapists, mental health specialists, cognitive enhancement specialists. You have all these assets at your disposal. If you were to try to access any of those as a civilian, we're talking hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. So the Army is investing in these people, and we want them to understand that the skills, the education they're going to get from a program like H2F, amongst all the other programs the Army has to offer, is phenomenal. And it's people paid that legitimately care about your health and well-being. So I guess I'm getting off topic, but at the end of the day, I think that given enough time, the cost of H2F will far exceed the alternative, and it's going to be a permanent program, and we're hoping the other military branches follow suit.
I can dig it, man. But listen, we got to make sure that we get one thing done before. Let's make sure everybody knows this is just your thoughts.
Yeah, and I should have said that in the beginning, but everything I mentioned is or my personal opinion. It's not the opinion of the DOD, the Army, or even H2F. This is just two guys talking.
Yeah, man. But listen, before we get you out of here, Carson, is there any place that people can get in touch with you, stay at, follow you on the socials, all those things to see what you're doing?
I'm not big in any of that. There's a lot of content that other coaches are putting out, and I don't want to put out content that's not nearly as professional as other coaches. But if people wanted to get a hold of me, my work email, carson.a.randall.civ@army.mil, that's a great place to get a hold of me.
Awesome, man. We'll make sure that that's in the show notes, but you know, this has been a great half hour, Carson. I really appreciate your time today, man. Thank you so much for being with us.
Jay, my pleasure.
Yeah. And listen, man, we'll be in touch real soon because I can't wait to hear how these things continue to progress, because this is awesome stuff and obviously super important to everything that everyone would want to do in the future of this country.
Agreed.
Yeah, man. And as always, thank you for everything you all do for us here at Central Virginia Sport Performance. We'll be back next week with another awesome guest. We will see you then.